the Milwaukee Bucks have fired head coach Mike Budenholzer. It's Friday, May 5th. This is Wisconsin Today. Good morning, I'm Alex Crow. Coming up, we've got the latest in the debate over how the state funds local governments. And Sarah Lear reports on the legal battle over abortion rights in the state. Stay with us.
Gardening in Wisconsin is a year-round job, and Garden Talk is here for you throughout every season. We help you battle relentless pests and pick your favorite mulch. We also cover how to care for houseplants and successful methods for starting seeds inside. We want to know what keeps your garden growing. Join me, Larry Mueller, for Garden Talk on the Ideas Network, Fridays at 11 and Saturday mornings at 6, or online anytime.
The Milwaukee Bucks have fired their head coach. The team confirmed yesterday that they dismissed coach Mike Budenholzer. The move comes after the team's upset loss in the first round of the NBA playoffs. Budenholzer has led the team for 5 seasons, with the Bucks finishing first in the Eastern Conference 3 of those 5 years. The team won the NBA championship in 2021, but other winning seasons have not translated to playoff success. In a statement, Bucks management called the decision difficult. They called the change, quote, a chance to refocus and re-energize our efforts as we continue building toward our next championship season. A Dane County judge heard arguments yesterday in a lawsuit that's trying to restore abortion rights in Wisconsin. As Sarah Lear reports, a Republican district attorney is asking to have the case dismissed.
Democratic Attorney General Josh Call filed the suit days after Roe v. Wade was overturned. He's attempting to block enforcement of a 19th century Wisconsin law that bans abortions unless they're done to save a pregnant person's life. The AG's office contends that law conflicts with newer Wisconsin abortion laws. Assistant AG Hannah Jurs made that argument before Circuit Court Judge Diane Schlipper Thursday morning.
Women in the state of Wisconsin are not currently able to receive critical health care that they have had a constitutional right to receive for nearly half a century because of the very lack of clarity in the law.
It's likely the matter will eventually make its way to the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Sarah Lear, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Governor Tony Evers is threatening to veto a Republican bill that would increase state funding to local governments. Evers says the plan falls short of what local governments need. In a recorded message on YouTube, Evers also criticized the way the Republican bill would attach new requirements for communities to receive the new funding, which could only be used on expenses like police, emergency medical services, and roads.
You know, here in one way we want to bring them more money, and in another way we want to take more control away from them. It doesn't make sense. Send me a clean bill that talks about the money that we're going to give to the municipalities.
Both Evers and GOP lawmakers have agreed in principle on spending 20% of the state's sales tax on local government funding. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss and Senate Majority Leader Devin Lemahieu called the governor's comments disappointing and said the city of Milwaukee will go bankrupt if the bill does not pass. The head of the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources said the state legislature should provide more funding than what's proposed under the governor's budget to address PFAS contamination. Danielle Kading has more.
DNR Secretary-designee Adam Payne made the remarks Tuesday as part of a PFAS event in Wausau. Governor Tony Evers has proposed more than $100 million to address the harmful chemicals. Most of that would be offered through a grant program to help communities respond. Payne said those funds weren't among hundreds of items stripped from the budget by GOP lawmakers on the state's Finance Committee. He urged people to contact legislators about preserving that funding.
It's a little over $100 million. It should be more than that. Not less, but more.
Some GOP lawmakers have indicated support for funding efforts to address the chemicals. Republican Senator Howard Markline co-chairs the state's Finance Committee. He said it's yet to be determined how much money will be provided. Danielle Kading, Wisconsin Public Radio.
The University of Wisconsin-Madison's campus erupted in protest this week over a student's racist video. That's happening at the same time the UW system is getting pressure from the state legislature for perceived liberal bias. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss is suggesting potential budget cuts to the UW system if it does not phase out diversity, equity, and inclusion offices at its campuses. Calls to end that funding are happening while hundreds of students are protesting on UW-Madison's campus. They're calling for the expulsion of a fellow student who in the video threatened the lives of black people and used racial slurs. LeVar Charleston, campus diversity head, posted a video to students on social media.
I want our black students to know that I do indeed stand with you. I look forward to working with you to help realize sustainable change that makes things better, not for just students who are here right now, but for all of our future students as well.
Campus officials said they are not legally able to take action against the student. Coming up, we've got a story about the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League. Stay with us.
You know you can count on WPR for news that's important, music that makes your day better, and conversations that make you think. We hope you'll make a financial contribution to support the radio service you rely on, and in fact, we count on it. The single largest portion of our budget comes from listener support. If you're not a member yet, make a gift of any amount today at WPR.org. Thank you.
And finally, it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Brad Kohlberg with a story about baseball.
The early 1940s saw the rise of the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League.
That All-American pastime, baseball, brings out the All-American Girl Baseball League for spring training at Alexandria, Virginia. Two teams are working out, the Fort Wayne Daisies and the Racine Belles, getting in shape for an opening day doubleheader.
Author Dean Robbins tells us about a memorable moment from the league's historic run.
A major event in sports history took place in September 1943. Two teams played in the first championship series of the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League. Both were from Wisconsin.
Okay, gals, play ball.
The league was founded that year to keep fans coming to ballparks while male players served in World War II. It held tryouts for women around the United States and Canada and picked top prospects for the first four teams, the Racine Belles, Kenosha Comets, Rockford Peaches, and South Bend Blue Sox. The female athletes had the rare opportunity to get decent salaries, play for big crowds, and bask in media attention.
These league champions play 126 games a season and earn up to $100 a week. Nice going, girls.
Unfortunately, there was no avoiding 1940s-style sexism. The women had to follow strict rules for grooming and manners. They were even forced to wear ladylike uniforms, including short skirts that offered no protection for their legs when sliding into bases.
Jean Bunsett, the squeeze is on. Tibby Eisen slides home with a run and a nicely bruised leg. Better a bruise than long pants, eh, gals?
At first, the public viewed the women as mere novelties. But fans soon realized that these were serious ballplayers, according to the Racine Belle's Sophie Curis. She shared this in an interview with Grand Valley State University.
You know, we were a curiosity to begin with. And then when they came out and saw that we could really play, then they came out in droves and we did really well.
The All-American Girls Professional Baseball League proved popular in Wisconsin. Kenosha's Helen Nicole emerged as the 1943 season's best pitcher, with 31 wins and 220 strikeouts. In the All-Wisconsin Championship Series that fall, the Belles bested the Comets in three straight games, with Racine catcher Irene Hickson batting a torrid .417. The league expanded to 10 teams, and attendance rose to nearly a million in 1948. But recruiting new players proved difficult, and owners cut back on expenses. In 1954, they shut down the operation amid a backlash against women playing baseball. But the players had made their mark, paving the way for other women's professional leagues. And even though it took a while, they got their due. They were honored by the National Baseball Hall of Fame and memorialized in Hollywood's A League of Their Own. Joyce Barnes McCoy pitched for the Kenosha Comets in 1943. Here she is describing her appearance decades later at a ball game in her native Hutchinson, Kansas.
Oh, they asked me to come and throw out a pitch, and when they introduced me, I stood up, and that whole grandstand was alive, yelling and hollering. And so I waved, took my hat, waved at them, and then they started in again. And all the umpires and things, they took their hats off, and I had to autograph everything.
Yes, hats off to Joyce Barnes McCoy and other Wisconsin players from the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League. It's good to know that, by the end of their lives, they finally had a chance to feel like All-American legends.
Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm Brad Kohlberg.
And that'll do it. Thanks for joining us for Wisconsin Today. I'm your host, Alex Crow. Our producers are John Davis and Bridget Bowden. You can catch us, as always, wherever you get your podcasts every weekday morning. And of course, don't forget to subscribe and leave us a rating and review. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you again on Monday.